This episode is brought to you by StubHub. There is nothing better than seeing your favorite artist live in concert, and StubHub gets that.
Explore your live style on the world's largest ticket marketplace. And stick around, because a little later in the show, we'll be talking about some of our all-time favorite live events. Make sure you head on over to StubHub.com/pop to find your next concert ticket.
Switched on Pop and Vox Media are conducting a short annual survey, and it would mean a lot to us if you'd fill it out.
It's just 2, maybe 3 minutes, and it radically helps us sustain and improve the show. So please head over to voxmedia.com/podsurvey or click the link in our show notes to fill it out. Thanks, and now on to the show. Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
Charlie, today under discussion, the art of the comeback.
Ooh. Oh, this is exciting.
Yeah, and this is a high-stakes comeback, because we're talking about a big pop act that has been broken up for like 6 years now.
Oh.
Releasing their first new single. They got to come correct, right?
It's the Grateful Dead.
It's a trio.
Oh.
Okay, so that narrows it down a bit.
Okay.
All male.
Bill Evans Trio.
All related.
Oh.
And now it's narrows. All recently married to famous celebrities in their own right.
Oh, wow.
I'll give you the partners.
Yeah.
Priyanka Chopra.
Oh.
Sophie Turner, a.k.a. Sansa Stark of Game of Thrones. Danielle, I'm not going to say her last name because that'll give it away.
Oh.
Reality television star.
I have no idea.
Wow, you are out of the loop, and I love it, because we are going to bring you in, because today we are talking about the Jonas Brothers.
Oh, cool.
Back on the charts after a long hiatus. Nick, Joe, Kevin, they're delivering the goods, and they have to, right? Because if they make this big comeback, especially now that they're all married off to celebrities in their own rights.
Yeah, they're megastars. They can't fail.
No, so this is where, on this episode, we're going to explore their new song, Sucker, and we're going to see how a reuniting mega group is going to go through a recipe list, essentially.
Okay, sure.
What are the key ingredients of making a surefire pop hit in 2019?
Awesome. I am so excited. So where do we begin?
Let's begin with the chorus of their new song, Sucker. I'm a sucker for all the subliminal things no one knows about you, about you, about you, about you. And you're making the typical me break my typical rules. It is true, I'm a sucker for you. Yeah.
Ooh, is that like an Almond Break kind of thing?
Yeah.
With the drums, and there's like... This is not, I was expecting like even more bubblegum pop for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, because they are, when you think of the Jonas Brothers in their sort of prime incarnation.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They were like the paragons of bubblegum pop.
Yeah.
But now they're a little older, a little more mature.
Yeah.
So they have to retain something of their like innocent past while also showcasing their newfound maturity.
Sure.
But you're into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cool track. Yeah.
Good.
It's got really good energy.
Yeah. Great. Now I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit.
Okay.
Who in the past, who was the lead singer of the Jonas Brothers?
I'm going to say Nick.
And you'd be wrong.
I'm just guessing. I have no idea. It's not Kevin.
No, it's not Kevin. You do know that. He's Kevin. That's kind of a trick question. Kevin doesn't really sing. He's more of the guitar player.
Okay.
You know. But yeah, Joe was always up front. Now let's go to the very beginning of this track, because... Okay. We'll see if that's still the case. We go together, better than birds of a feather, you and me. We change the weather,
yeah. I'm feeling heat in December when you found me. Nice falsetto.
Yeah, that falsetto is belonging to Nick Jonas.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is interesting. He's like... maybe becoming the new leader of the group, perhaps.
He had the most successful solo career in music, no?
I would say so,
yeah.
So I think we're seeing like they're reforming, but there's a new hierarchy at play.
This is like if the Beatles got back together and Ringo were the lead singer.
No, not quite. That would be if Kevin was the lead singer.
Okay.
Okay, so this is really smart, though, the way they start this song, because they're playing into the narrative of the band itself.
Oh.
And like, so now Nick is the new lead singer. Let's go back to the verse. So he kicks it off, but then Joe is going to come in.
Okay.
So let's play that clip from the start again. We go together. So here's Nick at the start.
And they go together.
Yeah. You and me. We change the weather. Yeah. I'm feeling heat in the sun. Okay, now here's Joe.
Is this a song about climate change?
Ooh. And then check this out. You're the medicine and the
pain. The tattoo inside my brain. And baby, you know it's obvious. Ooh, I like that.
Right?
Yeah. Okay, so we get one brother, two brothers, brother Twan.
It's really fun, right? It's like it's musically satisfying, but it's also giving you this narrative of like literally these brothers coming back together, one voice, another voice, and then the two voices in harmony. It's really
cool. And
the
lyric is we go together, yeah. Birds of a feather. I mean, I think it sounds like it's maybe about a relationship, but it has a double meaning. The
right.
Brothers are back.
It could be about family.
It's basically Backstreet's Back All Right.
Yeah. never a bad idea.
Wasn't
to reference.
Wasn't that their first song? I don't understand. It was one of their first mega hits, and I don't know where they're coming back from. I think maybe they had whatever.
That's a profound question that we must save for another time, yeah. Charles. So this song is smart. I think it's a very smartly constructed song. And they're going to pull in a lot of references that are, I think, really deliberately poised to make the song success in 2019.
Yeah.
So I want to pick out a couple of those now. And I want to start with that section that you really liked, the funky drum breakdown section.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on here.
Okay.
And the first thing I want you to pay attention to is the whistle. That is some hot whistling, if I do say so myself.
It's good whistling.
And
not common. I don't feel like we hear a lot of whistling.
Oh, see? I disagree, Charles. Oh. This is great. Okay. I disagree. Yeah. I think we do hear it a lot. And in fact, it may be so common that we're not even totally aware of how much we see it. In fact, I think throwing a whistle on your track in 2019 is like a surefire way
to get
a pop hit. And I think we can trace this back. It's actually been going on for a good decade. Huh. Because if you go back about 10 years, you had a big hit in a song by Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros called Home.
Whistling is not as good on this one. It's a little out of tune.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But I think that's because what we're hearing here is like the start of this trend in the world of indie rock.
Yeah. It also serves a different purpose. Like that whistle for me is like whistle along. So it's okay if you're not totally in tune.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe the Jonas Brothers sounds like whistle at.
Yeah, totally. And we won't play it, but there's also other examples like Young Folks by Peter Bjorn and John.
Right.
Like in the late 2000s, this really belonged to the world of indie music.
Okay.
But what we see, I think, over the 2010s is like the trend of whistling starts to migrate into the language of pop.
Huh.
So like we can listen to, actually, I'm not going to tell you who this is. Let's just play the next clip. So far, we're just hearing acoustic guitar and whistling. Yep. Any guesses who the song might be by?
I have no idea.
Describe the kind of artist it might be by.
Nickelback comeback.
Okay, great. Let's keep listening. Can you blow my whistle, baby? Whistle, baby. Okay, here's the first clue. Girl, I'm gonna show you how to do it, and we start real slow. You just put your lips together and you come. Charlie is grimacing so deeply right now. Baby, now Charlie is shaking his head.
I don't like it.
Why not?
That drum beat, if done poorly, sounds like the first drum beat that a rock drummer learns. It just is very cliche. I'd hate the compressed guitars. The whole thing just sounds very affected.
I don't disagree, and probably not uncharacteristic for a Flo Rida track.
Oh my God. I was going to actually, I'm not even kidding. I was like, Don't tell me this is Flo Rida. I was going to say that.
Yeah, and you would have been right. This is Whistle by Flo Rida.
I don't like it.
So we're hearing this like indie sound now starting to wiggle its way into the world of pop music. As this whistling technique migrates from the world of indie to pop, I think it becomes more and more an essential sound of a pop hit in the late 2010s. Let's spin a little song, Sit Still, Look Pretty by Daya.
All right, I'll tell you what I heard.
Yeah.
Whistling.
This is another song. I've heard it on the radio. I never noticed before. This features whistling very prominently.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you one more. It's Maroon 5, Moves Like Jagger. Mm.
Wild. I would have almost, if you had asked me to hum that, I would have been able to, or to whistle it.
Yeah.
Thought it was a synthesizer or something else.
Yeah. I mean, it may be, I don't know. This may be a synthesized whistle or like a augmented human whistle. But it's interesting, you know, like now let's step back for a second. Like, why the whistle? If you buy my argument here that the whistle is actually kind of a ubiquitous feature of modern pop hits, why? Because it's a little odd. It's like, why the whistle?
I'll just be direct. It sounds like crowd pandering. It's like getting everybody to start clapping their hands at a particular moment. It's just a surefire way of getting people to participate. I don't mean to be too cynical about it, because musical participation is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Here's the downside if that's true. Most people can't whistle well. Oh no.
Yeah, that was rough. I'm sorry everyone had to hear that. And I try, Charlie. I practice all the time. No, I think you're totally right. And I don't mean to suggest that we are listening to this century's modern masterpiece. I think we're listening to a very savvy pop song here.
Hmm.
Not necessarily, you know, one of extraordinary artistic integrity. But I think you're right. The whistle is a tool to pander. You know, the whistling is like what you do when you're skipping down the street, and it makes you feel good, and it's naive and childish. It's simple, right? Like good pop music.
And I've got it. Okay, so get this. So the whole song opened up. If we go back to the Jonas Brothers, right? So the first lyric is like, we go together.
Yeah.
They start joining each other. Uh-huh. So it's brother, second brother, third brother. And the whistling is everybody else. It's like everybody is invited to participate.
Yeah. I'm totally on board. Okay. It's very,
good comeback.
Yeah. If you want to smash in 2019, you want to throw a whistle on there. Mm. What else do you want? Okay. The next thing is actually in that same exact section. It's those drums that immediately you were like, whoa, I like this.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's spin that one more time. Let's just focus in on that funky drum rhythm.
I love it.
It's so good, right?
It's one of those drum breaks where you can't find the repeating pattern because there's so much syncopation in it.
Yeah.
And so you just keep getting pulled into it.
Yeah. This is the other ingredient in the recipe for a perfect pop song in the 21st century. It's not a program. It's not a software. It's not an instrument. It's a person. A person named Homer Steinweiss.
Wait, what? That's not where I thought you were going to go.
Yeah, no, it's true. If you want to have a pop smash in 2019, you have to get yourself a Homer Steinweiss.
Wait, where do I buy one? This is because I was even noting, like, that's a long interlude for just drumming and even live drumming. So Homer must be alive. Drummer.
Homer is indeed a live drummer.
And he's the essential session drummer right now.
Yeah. In fact, I'd hazard that you've heard him many, many more times than you might think.
Huh.
Because Homer Steinweiss is, among other things, the drummer for Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
What? That's it. That's beautiful.
Yeah. That's how long do I have to wait for you? Rest in power, Sharon Jones.
Yeah.
So Homer Steinweiss, drummer for the Dap Kings.
Yeah.
But also on tracks like 24 Karat Magic by Bruno Mars.
Oh, it's such a good track. Everything that Bruno does is pristine, right? Like every note is placed perfectly. And just like that other, like the drum break in the Jonas Brothers,
yeah,
the drumming here, I cannot find the repeating pattern.
Yeah. And it's different here. I think Homer Steinweiss is being like augmented with some maybe electronic drums and some other sounds.
Yeah. Oh, certainly.
But you're right. We're hearing some characteristic qualities of his style, like these non-repeating phrases, these sort of off-kilter syncopations, and just something more indescribable, a certain feel, a certain touch, a certain approach that cannot be recreated in a laptop.
No, it's too... It's both so perfect and so human.
Totally. And I love that, Charlie. I think one other place you really hear this is his drumming on one of my favorite songs of all time, Rehab by Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no.
Even though just those little fills in between.
I know. Perfect.
It seems so simple. And yet there's all these little moments where he just like snags a spare moment of open space.
Yep. It's like something you think you've heard before, but then you realize like, no, I've never heard that exact rhythm before.
I'm fascinated by this too, because his style is so 1950s, mm-hmm. which you can certainly hear in Amy Winehouse, but even in the Jonas Brothers, I was noting that as well. It's like both feels like it's got a like breakbeat thing.
Totally.
But as if done on oldies radio.
Yeah, no, it's totally unique. And if you're, you know, a canny pop star in 2019 and you need a shirt for your, you know, fraternal reunion, you got to get a Homer Steinweiss.
I got to figure out if I can get one at Guitar Center.
Okay, so just to quickly recap, you need your Homer Steinweiss, you need your whistling, and you need one other element to send your song to the top of the charts. But we're going to talk about that after a short break.
Okay, so I like seeing live music about just as much as I like talking about it. And today, our friends at StubHub want to know, Nate, what was your first concert?
Okay, I'm not sure if this was the first, but it's the first one that I remember.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't talk a lot about our mutual history of being Phish fans.
Oh no.
Phish.
Yes.
It's really not something to be shared in certain company. But we are, and it is a part of us. And I have to say, I went with my friends Mike and Brent, and Brent's mom, of course, to Hershey, Pennsylvania to see Phish play. And it was so much fun. It was amazing. And on the way back, I kid you not, double rainbow. Over
Whoa.
The highway. Yep. So that was like, that was a
did
very
the show
auspicious
bring some magic, or did you bring some
start.
Magic?
Oh, I mean, there was a lot. It was so much more than just the show. I mean, the music was great, but I was also like the people there, the hippies, it was like, I was like, wow, I am 12 years old and this is a lot for me to take in now.
12. Yeah. I think my first show, I think, was also around 12, and I saw Casey and the Sunshine Band.
What?
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
It was really fun.
Were you wearing your boogie shoes?
I was wearing my boogie shoes.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was fabulous.
Wait, I want to see Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah. Field trip.
StubHub is here to help you make more music memories.
Get tickets to any genre, any artist, anytime, and explore your live style with StubHub.
Go to StubHub.com/pop to find your next concert ticket. Play has changed a lot since I was a kid. Nate, no joke, my favorite toys used to just be wooden blocks.
Yeah. Wait, what would you do with them?
I'd make towers.
Oh, right.
They were great.
Of course.
But now there's so much more to it. Uh-huh. Everything is so geared towards learning, which I think is super awesome.
Totally.
And that's exactly why I'm telling all my friends with kids to check out KiwiCo.
KiwiCo.
Yeah, so KiwiCo actually sent us a box of some of their great toys.
Whoa.
So let's open it up.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
I love toys. Why does it have to be for kids?
Yeah.
Why can't I have toys?
You're saying that holding your child dog.
My dog. I prefer the term dog child, actually.
Oh, this is really nice.
Kaleidoscope puzzles.
Oh, this is neat. Yeah, I feel like this would like definitely make learning super fun.
I got to contain my excitement here because I feel like a giddy little
kid. Check this thing out.
Whoa, we have a whole like comic book here, too. And it explains what symmetry is, talks about symmetry in nature. There's something called Steve's Sock Dilemma.
There's like a ton of activities in here. I feel like there's like, it's like equal parts learning, equal parts fun.
Yeah.
I feel like you and I need to like dig in and actually just like play some games.
I know, right? No, it seems like if you had a kid, this would be something you could do with them or you could have them do on their own. Like it's pretty flexible.
Yeah.
And that's because KiwiCo designs their projects specifically to encourage confidence and creativity. The goal is that through play, kids get an enriching learning experience that carries over into everything they do.
And it also seems super fun, which I think is essential because I think we know that if learning does not have play and fun involved in it, it's not going to stick.
Nope.
So this is super cool. I am very excited to have a KiwiCo.
Totally. At the end of the day, kids just want to have fun. And part of what makes KiwiCo's project so enriching is that fun factor.
Change the way your kids play with KiwiCo. Visit KiwiCo.com/switched and get your first crate free. That's KiwiCo.com/switched for your first crate free. KiwiCo.com/switched.
So we've heard how whistling and the unique drumming of Homer Steinweiss are two of the elements that the Jonas Brothers are using in order to make sure their new song, Sucker, gets to the top of the charts. And there's one other thing they're doing. This is a little more subtle. So I think we're going to have to break down this final ingredient a little more slowly.
Yeah.
And actually, I want to start somewhere else. I want to start with our last episode with Emily King.
Okay.
Something we didn't really go into too deep with her, but something that really stuck with me. She said the hardest part of a song for her to write is the second verse.
Huh.
Do you remember this?
I'm not remembering right now.
She said, "This is the second verse is so hard because you've just peaked with the chorus, right?
That's right, yeah.
You've finally given the listener this like triumphant moment, and then you have a challenge. You're about to go back to like a less exciting or like a less dynamic part of the song. Verse,
yeah. She had described the chorus as like getting ice cream. So you've just had dessert,
yeah.
And now you have to have another meal."
Exactly. So this is like a challenging juncture for songwriters. What do you do with that second chorus?
Hmm.
Now, let's listen to what Emily King does on her song, Remind Me. So here's the big, triumphant ice cream chorus. What happened there?
There's a moment of silence.
Yeah, exactly.
You need a transition because the kinetics of the song they need to be different. You have to have contrast. And here, rather than sort of going from the highest slope down to like a middle plateau, she actually goes all the way down to the bottom for a second.
You got
basically silence.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. Okay, cool. So falling from a cliff into a well or something.
Deep mixed metaphors.
But it's like it's vertiginous, it's disorienting. Maybe that's what you need in order to get the listener to pay attention.
If we go back to our earlier metaphor, we could call it a palate cleanser.
I like it. Let's call this, for lack of a better term, the second verse dropout.
Sure.
Okay. I'd like to suggest that Emily King is far from alone in using this technique in order to sustain interest into the second verse, because it's exactly what the Jonas Brothers do following the first chorus of Sucker. I'm a sucker for you. Yeah. Don't complicate it.
Ooh. That's good. You feel suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're holding your breath and your hope that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Is it the end?
It's, yeah, totally. And it's counterintuitive because you're like, as we've talked about, you're generating all this energy in the chorus and then suddenly you just like pull the ripcord.
Goodbye.
But it works.
Yeah.
In fact, it's so effective that I would argue that the second verse dropout is like another one of these ingredients that you can use to get a surefire pop hit in the 21st century. So we've heard it in Emily King. Oh. We've heard it in the Jonas Brothers. Let's find some other instances of this second verse dropout.
Okay, cool.
And I want to start with one of my favorite songs. I mean, more than anything, this is just an excuse to play Jason Derulo's Want to Want You.
Again?
Yeah.
Open the door. This one's a little different. It drops out. There's like a tiny second of silence.
Totally.
Millisecond of silence.
Yeah.
And then his voice comes in, and then the rest of the arrangement comes in.
Yeah, yeah, you're totally right. So a variation on this, on the second verse dropout, but I think accomplishes the same thing.
Oh, definitely.
Deep drop in energy, and then you start to build it back up.
Feels like a...
Yeah. Another track that does this, and you know, I'm indebted to our listeners for this one for turning us on to an artist I'm a big fan of now, Rina Sawayama, and this is her song Cherry. Let's check out the chorus.
Wow, the 90s are alive on pop radio. Similar to Derulo, music drops out, voice is what carries you through. You
totally.
Need sort of like, there's always sort of like maybe one element, oftentimes it's just a reverb tail, but something is bridging.
Totally.
Yeah.
Once you start to listen, and I really encourage our listeners to do so.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as I started like actively searching for it, it was kind of overwhelming. You hear it in Maroon 5, What Lovers Do. You hear it in Taylor Swift, Shake It Off. It's all over the place. The second verse dropout.
Huh. So is this even a, this is not a thing of 2019. This is a bubbling up. You got good songwriters are doing this all over the place.
I guess I should rephrase. I'm saying these are some of the techniques you can use to generate a hit in like the 2010s.
Sure.
More accurate. Not just now. But I think the Jonas Brothers are clear, and their producers are like clearly very
clever.
You know, they know what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's no coincidence that another song that is currently sharing the top of the pop charts as of this recording also features a second verse dropout. And that's Sunflower by Post Malone and Swae Lee. You don't make it easy, no.
Wish I could be there for you. Give me a reason to. This one's neat. I like this because it drops out, but the arrangement doesn't come immediately back in.
Yeah.
The drums wait a moment.
Yeah.
And so there really is this take a breath moment.
Yeah. It's such an effective technique to overcome what Emily King is talking about, that challenge of like, how do you keep an audience's interest in that second verse?
Yeah.
Now, I want to put a little bracket on our discussion of the Jonas Brothers one sec, because I'm very consciously picking Sunflower right here, because this is about you and me, Charlie.
Oh, yeah. Oh no.
We're just going to take a quick moment because I need to ask you something. Did you like that?
Oh, I love Sunflower.
I thought you did. You were smiling. You were grooving. How do I put this? What's going on?
I don't know.
Anytime Post Malone comes up, Charlie goes apoplectic. He detests this artist, or so I thought. And yet here you are grooving along to Sunflower.
I feel like this is a case of where I will get hung up in both the celebrity and narrative around the person, and use that to supersede my ear and actually listening to the music, which is the exact reason why we do this project. It's like not get wrapped up in all of the, you know, celebrity journalism. It's like, yeah, we're really interested in what the music has to say. And I got swept away, which to a certain degree, I think is fair, right? Like Post Malone has some issues. The way that he represents his participation in hip hop culture, I think, is, let's just say, not particularly woke. Guy doesn't seem to have really done his homework, yeah, and has on and on said some really stupid stuff about the role of hip hop and his participation as a, yeah, as a white hip hop artist. And so I'm like, just write that guy off. And, you know, I think throughout pop music, there's all sorts of folks who are complicated personalities of varying degrees. At the same time, I will admit that Post Malone has a totally unique sound that is a blend of really catchy pop hooks, uh-huh, with inane lyrics mostly. but the guy can write a melody, basically, and he's like kind of blending songwriting, mm, into a lot of sort of trap. And when I'm not paying attention and I'm just putting on the radio in the car and a Post Malone song comes on, I've been finding myself not just like bopping my head, but actually like starting to sing the melody.
Yeah.
So there's these like this conflict of, I don't like the dude, but the music has hooked me, even, yeah, you know, despite my best intentions.
This is very moving for me to hear.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not an accident that I've sort of pivoted us to Post Malone here.
Okay.
Because the way that you're describing your Post Malone journey,
yeah,
I think it mirrors my Jonas Brothers journey. Because when I first,
yeah,
you know, delved into the music of this band, I'd already decided how I felt about them. And that was, I didn't like them. And they're not cool. And they're lame. And this music is not for me. And it sucks.
Yeah.
And, you know, through studying their music and their history, I did come away with this newfound appreciation for what they do. And I think we could even maybe expand that to like some kind of thesis about pop in general, which is like, okay, so let's step back for a second.
Okay.
Are songs like Sunflower and Sucker modern classics? Are we going to be listening to these 100 years from now? Are they going to be like in textbooks? Are they going to be, you know, studied alongside Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come?
I mean, maybe if it's a textbook about spring 2019, then sure. But if it's about the last couple of decades of pop music, I mean, obviously jury's out, but probably not.
Right. And it's a good point. You never know. You never know. But I agree. Unlikely. And yet I feel like it's still really valuable to dig deeply into these tracks, to understand how they work, even though they are fleeting pleasures.
Right.
Even though they are disposable, even though we might not be listening to them a few months from now.
I think we shouldn't get too stuck on the issue of a song's indelibility. Like, yeah, is that a word?
I don't know, buddy. I'm all in on it.
I just made it up.
You
can verb anything.
We're gonna throw it up on like Wiktionary or whatever.
But like, I think that there is this anxiety within pop music of like, does it matter in the long term?
Mm.
And I like what you're getting at, where it's like there is something beautiful about what is momentary, but what's happening right now. And especially if you're having a comeback that's happening, yeah, right now,
yeah,
you better be relevant at this particular moment. You've got to capture people's attention.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it makes me think of like, it's like a flower bloom, right? Like a pop song, like it arrives, it's beautiful. You can water it for a while. It gets it has a life and then it moves on.
That's a beautiful metaphor, Charlie. And in that spirit, let's recap. What is the sound of a hit pop song in 2019? And we're looking at three ingredients in particular. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Okay, let's see if I can bake this cake.
Okay.
We have got Whistle While You Work.
Whistle, yes.
You got a whistle.
The pandering whistle.
There is one drummer. His name is Homer.
Very good.
Steinweiss.
Steinweiss. You need Homer, yeah. Steinweiss.
And if it's not Homer, it sounds like live drums with a lot of vivacity in them. But if you can,
no, you need it.
You got a Homer Steinweiss.
Yeah, and so you can't get it at your local guitar center.
Oh man, I'll have to get his number.
And number three.
Ooh. Okay. So you got to drop out so that there's a place to build back to. You can't you can't give it all away too soon.
Tune in, turn on, drop out. Yeah. All right.
Would it be too bold to say that perhaps the hiatus of the Jonas Brothers mirrors the form of the second verse Dropout? It's like you got to get so big and then you have to take a brief pause and then you got to come back. And there's room yet to build.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
What's the final chorus going to be? You know? Oh, I'm excited. Oh, the anticipation.
We'll have to save it for the next episode. Charlie, that was beautiful.
Thank you. Switched on Pop is a production of Vox Media. Our producer is Jillian Weinberger. Engineering by Brandon McFarland. Our community manager is Sarah Terry. Our executive producers are Nishat Kurwa and Allison Rocky.
Again, we'd so appreciate it if you go to voxmedia.com/podsurvey and just take 2 or 3 minutes to fill out an audience survey.
It means everything to us because it helps us understand how to grow our show, where to take our show. It helps make the whole thing possible. So it means a lot. Yeah, voxmedia.com/podsurvey.
Beyond that, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, at Switched on Pop, or send your thoughts to contact@switchedonpop.com.
Yeah, we love getting your thoughts and recommendations. We're going to be back again in another week on Tuesday. We've got something really exciting coming up. One of my favorite songwriters. It's going to be spectacular. It's going to get deep. Until then, thanks for listening.
This episode of Switched on Pop was brought to you by StubHub. With tickets to more than 10 million live events worldwide, StubHub is the world's largest ticket marketplace.
Whether you want to see your favorite artist of all time or a new up-and-comer, you can find tickets to any genre, any artist, anytime on StubHub.
Because going to concerts is more than just entertainment, it's a lifestyle. Go to StubHub.com/pop to find your next concert ticket.